How are you guys? Good evening. Hare Krishna. Is it your first time here?
Okay.
Yeah, I thought I recognized you. My name is Narottamananda Das. Nice to meet you. Are you? You live here in Dallas? Where? Oh, very good. Very good. I'm one of the monks here. We teach yoga and meditation, worship the deities. But usually on Tuesday nights, I read a little bit from Bhagavad Gita as it is. Our founder, Srila Prabhupada, you may have seen him before. I say, you know he was the guru of the Beatles? The movie, Hare Krishna? We just released the movie. It won most inspirational movie of the year. Yeah, it was just shown last night at the Angelica. It's this amazing theater over by Mockingbird Station. Yeah. Yeah, you'll see it soon on Netflix, but it's doing like a tour of the country. I've seen it 3 times now. I just like, because I'm so impressed with Srila Prabhupada. He's also recognized in Encyclopedia Britannica. He wrote more books than Shakespeare. Yeah, he wrote like 100 titles like this, about 500 pages each. It's phenomenal. I mean, there's the Vedic literature's like got an undergraduate, graduate, postgraduate level. Bhagavad Gita, we're in Sanskrit, they're known as Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayochana. So Bhagavad Gita is like a summary study of yoga on an undergraduate level. Not to discount it in any way. It's, if you read any book, this book is the best. It, in the sense that it gives you a holistic approach to like complete satisfaction of your body, your mind, your soul. Yoga, Krishna, he breaks it into 3 basic parts. Hatha yoga, like gymnastic yoga for health. Then there's Jnana yoga for the mind to distinguish reality from illusion. And then Bhakti yoga is the yoga of relationships, ultimately of our relationship with the Supreme. And Srila Prabhupada, once he was asked by 2 intellectuals in Mexico City, there's a graduate student out in the hall I just met just a few minutes ago, Gloria. She's into music too. But there's a group of them coming here. But we were talking about it, and these intellectuals, they asked Prabhupada, what is the purpose of life? And Prabhupada, he kind of rebutted and said, and he asked the question, he said, first tell me, explain to me that life has no purpose. So they couldn't say anything. Then Prabhupada said that the purpose of life, according to the Vedic literature, is ananda, happiness. Everybody is striving to become happy. You see? So in the Gita, Krishna, basically, he instructs Arjuna. Arjuna's 1 of 5 brothers, right? His oldest brother was emperor of the world. He was faced with a fratricidal war. 16 million men would be killed. And Arjuna is inquiring, you know, what is the purpose of life? I mean, why are we faced with so much opposition and constant, you know, conflict? And, you know, how do you overcome this? And, you know, what is the purpose of life? And who am I? And, you know, and so Krishna, he explains that if we try to become happy with material things, the problem is that everything material is temporary. So if you try to become happy with something that's temporary, our happiness is also. So when our happiness comes to an end, I don't know about you guys, how do you feel when your happiness comes to an end? No, I mean, you know, in general, yeah, because the soul is joyful by nature. You see, Krishna also explains that there are 3 modes of material nature: ignorance, passion, and goodness. And there's happiness, different types of happiness that people are, you know, aspiring for. But whether we're kind of happy or not really happy or we're very happy in the material world, ultimately everything is temporary. You see? This body is temporary. Right? So that type of happiness, Krishna, he says, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samadbhava. He says that materialistic endeavor for happiness will ultimately lead to frustration, to anger, to dissatisfaction, to depression, to delusion. You see, even violence, right? We see now even millionaires, you know, smashing out the windows of their hotel and shooting people, right? And all of these absurd, you know, outlashes, you know? So, you know, you think, oh my God, the guy's a millionaire, right? What in the world does he need to do? He could go play a video game and kill millions of people, right? Anyway, this is all, it's all an illness. It's this mental, it's this material illness. And we're all suffering from it in one, to one degree or another. But Krishna, he explains, he says that that type of happiness is actually an illusion. In Sanskrit, it's called maya. You see, just like a mirage in the desert, right? It looks like water, but when you go there, you're even more thirsty, right? Or sometimes animals come to the desert, they see a mirage, they go out there, there's no water, they see another mirage, another, and they just die out there, right? So even us, we acquire material things and we gain a sense of like achievement, you know? I've bought this house, I've bought this car, I've done this, you know? You see, but actually from the perspective of real satisfaction, we're not really progressing. But also if you put, Bhagavad Gita explains there's basically five material desires that impel us to perform all different types of things. But basically, for the material body, there's eating. Did you guys eat in the restaurant today? You're going to go? Oh, it's 7:30. We don't close till 9. Really? Oh, I see. Why, did you have a good time? I helped open a restaurant like 38 years ago. I was one of the chefs, first chefs. I'm a chef and a monk. Glad you liked it. We've been winning some really good awards. We won best restaurant in Dallas on the Dallas A-list, best food, best atmosphere. It's mostly young couples like you guys, you know, that are voting for us. Like, really, we went up against some of the best steakhouses in Dallas, you know. But everybody wants a change, you know. People are thinking about eating healthier. I mean, people are just, you know, getting a lot more. Yes, thank you. Anyway, so, yeah, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and for the material mind, gaining a sense of superiority over others. These desires impel us to perform all types of material activity. You see? But if you look at them on a graph, let's just say you have zero in the middle, and then you can go up plus one, plus two, up to plus 10, right? And you can go down negative one, negative two, down to negative 10, right? Okay, so let's look at these material desires for a minute. Now, you can divide these into millions of categories, but this is just a basic, you know, right? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and gaining a sense of superiority. Okay? So, now let's look at hunger. Okay, hunger is a negative experience, right? You're a little hungry, it's lunchtime, you know, you start getting that, what do they call that when your blood sugar goes down? Something with an H, it's in, on the tip of my tongue right now. You know what I'm talking about, right? You start getting that crazy headache, you know, and you just got to eat something. Yeah, it's a low blood sugar level, it usually hits you right in the middle of the day, you know? That's why most Asian cultures, you eat and you go to sleep for a little while, you know, instead of beating yourself up with that crazy headache and all that. Anyway, okay, so, you know, you're a little hungry, you know, it's lunchtime, so that's like a negative one. You know, you're starving to death, like the kids in the Congo, right? They haven't eaten for 3 days. It's like a negative nine, right? Okay, so now, at best, you can bring yourself back to the point of zero where you don't feel hungry anymore. If you eat more than that, again, you go down. You start, you know, experiencing, you know how it is. You get real tight or you get some, you know, gas and, you know, you can even kill yourself. There was a, years ago, I was living in Houston, and there was a famous woman, Epicurean, who was, she would evaluate restaurants, and, you know, do an article for the Houston Chronicle. And one night, she'd gone to three restaurants, and she'd eaten so much that she split her stomach open in the restaurant, and she dropped dead right on the floor. And when they did the autopsy on her, they said she had eaten 17 pounds of food that night. But even if you don't go that extreme, but still, like, my wife's supervisor for a hospital, you know, she tells me all these stories, you know, dietary related that are just, like, unbelievable, horrible, you know? But, yeah, so it's just, you know, okay, so, you know, you're hungry, it's a negative, you know, you go eat, you come back to the point of zero, you eat more than that, again, you go down. Sleeping, you know, fatigue. It's another problem, right? It's a negative experience. You know, you just, you've worked all day, you know, you put your heart and soul into it, right? And you are just so tired, you know? Your wife wants to go out or your kids want to play with you, you know? I just, leave me alone. I am so tired, right? Your best friend calls you on the phone. Oh, I'm calling him back, you know, or her back, right? Like that. I am so tired. It's a negative experience. Then you sleep, you bring yourself back to the point of zero, but if you try to sleep more than that, again you go down, right? You get that, you know, crazy dreams, I don't know about you guys, I sleep on a futon, so it's on a board, on a, like a, like a traditional kind of Indian style bed, just the plywood with the futon, because my back, I like my back to be really straight, but you know, if I sleep too much, you know, you start getting that really weird, uncomfortable sensation and on. Yeah, you know what it's like. Yeah. So, and then defending ourselves. Well, nowadays it's a big issue, you know, to carry a gun and all this stuff. But in general, for most of us, it's like keeping a roof over your head, you know, right? Paying to make sure all the bills are paid, right? So, you know, you've got your home, you know, mortgage payment, you've got your insurance payments, you've got your automobile, your loans, you know, your, hopefully, you know, you've got some money to go on vacation, you know, but basically it's a negative experience, right? There's the electric, the gas, the water, the phone, you know, and on, right? So you go out there and you work, right? So hopefully you're just working 8 hours, but let's talk about it realistically. By the time you drive back and forth, and by the time your supervisor begs or demands or manipulates you, you know, you end up working 10 and 12 hours plus the drive, you know, and then, you know, whatever else you throw on there, shopping and this and that. You're pretty much working 16 hours in a day. You know? I mean, come on, guys. How much are we going to work? This is getting out of hand. It's crazy. You know, it's a negative experience already, all these crazy bills. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, gasoline was 25 cents a gallon in this country. You know? You could buy a month's worth of groceries for 10 bucks. You know what I mean? Like, come on, guys. You know, they talk about, hey, good evening, everybody. Hare Krishna. Thanks for coming in. The pujaris are dressing the deities in their nightgowns. The curtain will open again at about 8 p.m., just like in 20, 30 minutes. We're reading a little bit from the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, the restaurant's open if you guys want to grab dinner and just peek back in. The curtain will be open from about 8 o'clock till like 8:40. Okay? You're very welcome. But, you know, we talk about how advanced we've become, right? Everybody throws out their iPhones and... and that's another big topic, you know. We're so, like, caught up in petty selfishness. You know, it's like, you know, what is the most selfish one, you know, it's not even a syllable. One, what is the most selfish one-letter word that you know? And here we are with our iPhones, our iPads, our iPods. You know, it's all about I, right? But, yeah, so, you know, if we're so advanced, man, houses should be cheaper. Food should be cheaper. We should be able to work less. You know what I mean? All this propaganda is so weird. It's like a misuse of English language or any language, you know? And all the terminology that they use and things that kind of like back it up. But really, it's all this rhetoric, and really what it comes down to is just like rampant exploitation. You know, come on, man, if this is really advancement, you know, why should I have to spend $500,000 for my home? When, you know, my parents bought the same size house when I was a kid for $50,000 or less. You know what I mean? I mean, we're only talking like 50 years. And, you know, and another thing, we're like so caught up in, I don't know what you want to call it, an over-endeavor for mundane things that are difficult to achieve, you know, that we use like the best men and women in the world to just waste time. You know, like, for example, all these automobiles that we manufacture, right? I don't know what it is. Everybody has this idea that if we have a new automobile, you know, somehow life's great, you know, somehow our problems have ended, you know? But you know, I mean, come on. You know, all right, here's a car. All right, it's 1 year later. All right, we got to change the shape of the fenders. You know, you change from a cassette player to a CD player. You know, you know what I mean? Is it like a minimal amount of improvement, if any? You know, usually it's cheaper quality materials and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, my point is that how many car designs do we need? I grew up going to India. I drove in those 1940 Ambassadors for like 20 years, man. And you know what I mean? Like, why do we have to waste so many men and women, you know, working? It's just a waste of human life to recreate all these car styles. We don't need all these car styles. We could just simplify the whole industry down to some simple vehicle, you know, put everything in there, make it, you know, eco-friendly, whatever, you know. Anyway, capitalism, you know, we all come, you know. But really what it comes down to is just we're wasting human life. People could be doing so many better things than just recreating a car style. You know, like changing a little line in a piece of, you know, whatever that is, metal, the sheet metal that they use to make the car body. So much energy goes into that. Like human beings won't exist unless, you know, there's a new fold in my, you know, in an automobile, a new light bulb on the front of the car. It's the same old thing. And once you get in the thing and you drive it, it's the same backache, the same car payment, the same blah, blah, blah. Anyway, eating, sleeping, right? Okay, mating. All right, everybody knows that, right? Defending, we're talking about keeping a roof over our heads, right? So, all right, you go out there, you work for how many hours, right? So it's a negative experience. All those bills are slapping you, you know, in the face. And then you go out there and you work 8, 10, 12, 14 hours. You know, you agree to all these insane contracts and all that stuff, right? And at best, you bring yourself back to the point where you got all your bills paid. Hopefully you can save something. Oh yeah, my kid's in college. I forgot, man. I gotta pay for that too. Anyway, then it's just a negative experience again. How much can you go on working? So we talk, yeah, and then defend. Oh, and then gaining a sense of, for the mind, there's this somehow this thing, you know, gaining a sense of superiority over others. Like, I was really surprised when I first heard this. You know, psychologists, they've evaluated, you know, modern television. And, you know, come on, you know, what's the big a draw? The big draw is sex and violence. Right? You know what it's like, right? It's, you know, the high-speed car chase, right? And the guy's shooting, bam, bam, bam. And then the guy drives through the guardrail and the car goes off the mountain and blows up. Right? That's one big thing. You know, and then the other thing is the will she or won't she, right? I mean, that's all we got out there, you know? Okay, and so, yeah, so the psychologists, they say that people enjoy seeing violence on television because they gain a false sense of superiority. That, wow, at least my life's not that bad. At least, you know, I didn't, my brother just didn't get murdered, you know, and they burned my house down and they've blown up everything that I own. You know, at least that didn't happen to me. You know, actually, I'm pretty happy. You know, it's so sad though, you know, that we take pleasure in other people's pain. But that's because we ourselves are struggling so much. We are so insecure. Material life is a very unstable environment. Anything can happen, like those people in Vegas, man. You know, just watching a country western show, you know. Anything can happen. Anything. There's like danger at every step. You know, but we're trying to gain this sense of superiority. You know, come on, even in the science, you know, presentations that they give, like, you know, human beings are the most advanced form of evolution. Right, we've got these big Nobel laureates, you know, like 3.2 billion years ago. Dead inorganic matter went through a sudden chance explosion and life began as we know it. You are the most advanced form of life. There is no life on any planet except Earth, and you are it. So, you know, okay, you know, all right, maybe you can excel in a particular field, but, you know, you can't be the best of everything. You know, it's just it's kind of egotistical. Like, you know guys like that, right? You know, they don't have any friends. Hopefully, as we get older, you know, we start to realize that we need some friends. So, you know, material life's like that. Zero, and then you go down. Hunger is a negative experience. You eat, you go back to the point of zero. You eat more, you go down. Sleeping, fatigue is a negative experience. You sleep, you come back to the point of zero. You sleep more than that, you go down. Sex is the same way. Defending yourself's the same way. Gaining a sense of superiority is the same way. So, what I'm saying is, Krishna's pointing out, there's no real happiness. It's just an illusion. Yeah, you get this sense of accomplishment. Okay, I've purchased this house. You know, I've done something, you know, like that. But the real fact of the matter is the house is another source of misery. It's another thing that you have to clean, maintain, paint, pay bills for. There's no real happiness in that. So what Krishna, he says, Achintabheda Abheda Tattva. He says that there's an inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference between us and the Supreme. That sounds very complicated, but Krishna gives a very simple, very sublime example. He says that just like a drop of ocean water, it has all the quality of the ocean. It's liquid and it's salty, but the drop's very small. It's infinitesimal, where the ocean is infinite. So in the same way, we have all the qualities of the Supreme, being part and parcel of God. Right? We're conscious, we're loving, we have intelligence, but we are very, very small. And the Supreme is unlimited, infinite. But because we are part and parcel of the Supreme, we are spiritual by nature. We're not material. You know, this insanity that's being taught in schools, you know, that life comes from matter. Right? Everything came from a sudden chance explosion. Everything has come from nothing. Do you guys believe that? I mean, come on, guys. Let's, you know, even something, okay, like, you know, a cell phone, right? Okay, this is relatively sophisticated, right? You guys probably know better than me, right? It's loaded with what? Microchips, semiconductors. What else is in there? You know, all that stuff. What?
processors, right?
Yeah. So, okay, now, without even talking where the components have come from, right? Okay, if we were just to take all those parts and explode them, right? How many times would you have to blow up those components for them to come down and be this phone? No, really, come on, let's talk about it. We're talking about the Big Bang now. Okay, now, if you were to blow up these components a million times, do you think once it would be the phone? 10 million? 100 million? Come on, let's just admit it, that is insane. It's never going to be the phone. Sudden chance explosions don't create anything orderly. Come on, one cell in our body is a million times more complex than this phone. You know? And they're saying that all of this whole creation and millions of universes have all come from this explosion? You know what I mean? Like, come on, guys, let's get back to, you know, science. Talk about faith, man, that is faith. But, okay, so, right? Sudden chance. Oh, yeah, here's another great example. They're saying that the Earth is traveling through space at the speed of 1,600 miles per hour. And if we move 1 inch closer to the sun or 1 inch farther away, we'll burn alive or freeze. And this is all happening by chance? I mean, come on, look at how, if we're traveling at 1,600 miles per hour right now, I mean, look at how smooth this is. So what the Vedic literature, what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching is that life comes from life. Western paradigms have embraced this concept that life comes from matter, but nobody's been able to demonstrate that. No one's ever witnessed the dead stone creating life. No one's ever seen a combination of chemicals create life. Like everybody knows, you know, what's in an egg, right? Right, there's the white part, and then there's the yellow yolk, right? And everybody knows any chemist can tell you the chemical composition, right? So, why can't a scientist create a chicken? That means that a chicken is a better scientist. All the chemicals are there in the egg. He knows everything, but he can't create the life. You see? If it's just chemicals, if life is just a matter of chemical combinations, then when somebody dies, you just inject the chemical that's missing and they should come back to life. Simple. You know, Walt Disney, when he died, he believed that could be done. And so he had his body freeze-dried. Did you guys know that? You heard about that? Did you guys hear about that? Walt Disney, the famous, right? So he had his body freeze-dried, and he said, when you guys come up with the cure for the disease that killed me, give me, administer the medication and bring me back to life. So he had his body in this, you know, flask, this, what do you call it? Cryer chamber? So then the court system, they couldn't disperse the inheritance money. You know, to his family, because they legally couldn't claim him to be dead. So one day, somehow or other, you know, that someone had pulled a plug out of the freeze-drying chamber and he thawed out. And then they announced he was dead and then everybody got the money. But this idea that, you know, life comes from matter, Vedic literature is clearly stating life comes from life. That's demonstrable. That's observable. See, in the Gita, Krishna, he's saying that he manifests in three primary ways. He says, Brahmeti Paramameti Bhagavaniti Shabdate. What that means is, Hare Krishna. What that means, are you giving class tonight? Kirtan for the RT? Okay. About 8 o'clock, they're going to open. Very well, won't you? Yeah, so Brahmeti means that everything is the energy of the Supreme. Krishna states that many times in the Gita and other Vedic texts, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matasavam Pavartate, everything emanates from me. Everything material and spiritual emanates from me alone. Okay? So, you know, you guys have probably already, especially you guys, you probably have all experienced this, right? Somebody at school, a professor, or somebody you know. Oh my God, you mean you're going to be a Hindu like your grandmother? You're going to be a Hindu and go to a temple and bow down in front of a statue? Are you insane? Right? Why would you ever devote yourself to Krishna? Better you devote yourself to IBM, Sony, Vipro. Krishna, are you mad? Right? But what Krishna is saying in the Gita, he's saying that just look at the basic necessities of life, right? Just like the air we breathe. So nice to breathe, especially if you have allergies. Okay? Does IBM create the air? Okay, what about the sunshine? Without the sun, we'd be frozen, we'd be blind, we'd be dead. Does Xerox create the sunshine? The food we eat is coming from the earth, from the rain, from the sun, right? It's not being produced by a Dell computer. What else? The wood we use for our furniture, the metal for our electronics, our buildings, the simple ability to see, to speak, to think. All of this energy is coming to us by a higher transcendental power far beyond human capabilities to reproduce, right? We can't make a company to recreate the sunshine. So empirically, scientifically, we have to admit that we are in contact with a higher transcendental power at every moment. And this power is maintaining us, it is controlling us, right? It's providing for us. And all of it's coming to us for free, right? Like when you guys go out there and you look up at the sun, you don't see a little price tag up there, right? So that's my question. Okay, that's my question. If everything you need to be happy and healthy and productive and successful in life is being provided for you, right, for free, what does that mean? You have 3 seconds. Okay, I'll recouch the question. All right, here it is. If your parents, you know, or say someone's parents, right, they do everything for their kid, you know, to make sure the kid is happy and healthy and, you know, successful and educated and, you know, productive, right? What does that mean about the parents? They love the kid, right? And nature is also functioning on the principle of love. We're all functioning on the principle of love. Come on, guys. You know, like, if somebody that you love calls you on your phone, what do you do? You're really happy, right? You're so like, yes, you called me, all right. Yeah, how you doing? I miss you. When can we be together? Right? Now, if somebody you don't like calls you on the phone, right? You just let it ring a few more times. You know, you got to think about it, right? So we're all functioning on the principle of love, and nature is functioning on the principle of love. It's just you and I, you know, it's just all of us. We're taking everything that's been provided freely and we're just exploiting one another. But actually, everything's being provided for us. Like, come on, especially Indian people, but even me, like when I was a kid, I never paid for food. You guys remember paying for food when you were kids? You could go to your neighbor's house and eat, right? Your aunt's house, you know, your mom always cooked something. Wherever you went, people were feeding you. You know, you go to church, you go to a baseball game, you go, you know, on a picnic. Everybody was feeding you. You never paid for food. Right? It's just so much more, such a loving environment. Even 50 years ago, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. So, love is a quality of personality. It's not a quality of energy. You see? So, Krishna, he says that, Brahmeti, everything is my energy. I'm providing everything. Everything's manifesting by my arrangement. right? And then he says, Paramameti, and I'm present within everyone's heart. Krishna loves us so much, he doesn't even leave us for a millisecond. You see, Krishna's there, and he's guiding us, and he's helping us to determine what is right, what is wrong, what's good, what's bad. Everybody experiences that. If you just study the basic movements of your own intelligence, you know, like me, when I grew up, I was part of a racing team. So I have to admit it, I'm a very aggressive driver. So when I'm out there on the road, you know, it's like, you know, I'm always kind of in the get ahead of the pack mode, you know. But you know, there's that super soul. You know, it's not like some premeditated knowledge or something you've learned from a book or something, but it's actually a personal exchange. It's a voice, you know, it that's, you know, hey, Narottam, remember that speed trap up ahead? Whoa, buddy. I used to be part of a traveling Sangirtan party. You know, we travel all over the place. So when I started driving, my guru, he told me, hey, Narottam, you know, Krishna's always with you in your van. I said, oh, that's really nice. He said, until you go over 75, then he jumps out. But what I'm saying is, if we just study the movement of our own intelligence, we can see there's a presence of a higher consciousness that's guiding us, helping us to fulfill our desires and trying to, you know, direct us in the right way. You know? But beyond that, there's actually a personality of Godhead. In the Vedic tradition, we have this term Bhagavan. So, according to the Gita, according to the, it's actually, Srila Haridas Thakur, he was a famous teacher and the Acharya of chanting the holy name, which we're going to have a good experience of. Mahatma Prabhu here is visiting. When's your seminar, Prabhu, on chanting? Saturday and Sunday? All day? Starts what time in the morning? 9 to 6 Saturday, 9 to 4 Sunday. And he's going to be teaching the whole process of mantra meditation. So before we start singing here, we're going to start in just a couple of minutes. You know, someone might ask you, okay, what's the purpose of all of this? Right? Krishna says it's to experience real happiness and to be ourselves. So, you know, we talked about a lot of things, but this idea of Bhagavan and connecting with the Supreme Person, okay? Krishna explains that the most simple and sublime method to do this is through sound. Just like if somebody tells you that they love you, right? It affects us. So in the same way, there are spiritual sound vibrations called mantras. We're famous for this Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This chanting is a very sublime method and puts us directly in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the via media of His name. Like I was explaining, we're part and parcel of the Supreme, so because of that, we are spiritual by nature. So when we place ourselves in a spiritual environment, we become peaceful and happy. So I'm going to stop right now. Thank you guys so much for coming tonight and for giving me a chance to talk a little bit about Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Hey, you guys, you know you're on television when you're in here? You see the camera back there? My mom likes to watch. Hey, Mom. But you guys can always connect to us online, too, through krishna.com or also mayapur.tv. That's our main, it's like a link. It's an internet television service, mayapur, mayapur.tv. And you can link and watch these programs. Thank you. Thank you very much, darling.